In the 3 short years during which the castle had been open to the public for business, it had gained quite a reputation, and a significant following as well. The thrill was not reserved for the young. Patrons of all ages boasted of their bravery within the castle's walls. It was a typical seashore funhouse, a form of entertainment that graced many of the amusement spots that dotted the Jersey shore. But this one was something more. Added to the recipe for the usual old-time funhouse fare was the element of live actors, who assumed the personas of all of history and cinema's most notorious monsters, with a few added horrors exclusive to the monsters of Pete's Beach thrown in for good measure. Many of the actors were local theater students from the state college that was located just inland of Pete's Beach Island. They honed their craft at the castle. Vampires, werewolves, freaks, deeks, hunchbacks, these were the staples of the castle's cast. The black shroud of the Wraith was their uniform. At the end of the day, these horrible creatures were just a collection of fresh-faced codes, seashore drifters, and fun-loving ex-hippies. Some were young, some were older with young hearts. The castle was their chosen niche for the summer. Their drifting or studying would be put on hold for 3 months of the year. They had found their vacation home in the damp darkness of the castle. The actors' orientation to the castle cast included quite a long list of do's and don'ts for the rookie monsters. A yellowed piece of notepaper posted on the dressing room wall since the first season that the castle had opened outlined the tenets of its behavioral code. Rule number 1. No touching the customers. Rule number 2. If you touch the customers, don't get caught. Harry, the pier's owner, never bothered to go inside the castle. The workings within were far too menial for Harry to waste his time with. He had only agreed to the crazy idea of opening the amusement pier after carefully analyzing its feasibility as an investment. It was just an added facet in his already lucrative slot machine rental empire. He had been persuaded to invest in the pier by his financial advisor, his wife Connie. Connie herself never set foot on the pier, never set foot on Pete's Beach, as a matter of fact. She happily sat in their spacious North Jersey mansion, making spa and lunch dates with friends, content to dispatch their 2 teenage daughters to the pier to check on the quality of the staff. This kept Harry from having to ever inspect the workings of the castle himself. He was content to watch the fistfuls of cash pass from the patron's hands to those of the cashier inside the admission booth, via closed-circuit camera. Harry had never once passed through the entrance. He despised this sort of place. To Harry, it represented nothing more than a colossal waste of time. A very profitable colossal waste of time. And so, Harry had a wax replica of himself placed in the castle, so he could keep an eye on things, even if only in spirit. This wax figure was mysteriously moved to a different location at the beginning of each castle workday. Jokes were often made referring to the figure as cursed, much like the curses borne by the tombs of the pharaohs. Anyone who dared invoke the wrath of the mighty Amun-Ra Harry by touching the figure might lose a hand or foot or some other vital appendage. Just behind the castle itself lay the true heart of the funhouse, the dressing room. This was where the grease paint was applied by the all-too-capable hands of Sandy and Little Mac, the castle makeup artists. The level of activity inside the dressing room was at its height at the beginning and end of each shift, with actors hurriedly looking through the racks of costumes to find just the right one for their character, then taking their place in line at the makeup table. It was a bright and cheerful place during these times, making it hard to believe that this room's only separation from the murky gloom of the castle's interior was a single thin plywood door. The brightness and noise provided a distinct contrast to the gloom of the castle itself. Every time the door opened, a tiny wisp of that gloom found its way into the dressing room, creeping silently across the floor with sinister stealth, only to finally be trampled and dissipated by the scurrying feet of the actors. Sandy was a pretty woman of about 30 years. Her halo of curly chestnut hair framed her face as she leaned in toward the faces of the actors she painted. A clean mixture of peppermint Tic Tacs and patchouli oil hung in the air around her like an aura. She wore a boho mixture of clothing layers, light airy printed fabrics. Always different. Always the same. She embodied the Earth Mother so popular in these times. Post-hippie. It was after all the early 1980s. Even flower children eventually had to grow up. She was thoughtful and good, natured, self-assured and wise. And slightly off the wall, Sandy always tried to take as domineering a stance as her diminutive 5'2" frame would afford her.